Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Criss, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Criss host.
Welcome to our audience for this podcast on the Pathways to Excellent channel, sponsored by Roland Criss. I'm Ron Hagen, chairman of the Fiduciary Standards Committee at Roland Criss, and I am glad to be the host of today's live 15-minute podcast. We have a terrific guest, expert who's going to be participating in our conversation on a board's perspective of the Employee Retirement Income Securities Act impact on enterprise risk management. In this episode, we're going to share some of our observations on best practices in enterprise risk management from that perspective of a director. And as I indicated, our specific focus will be on retirement plans. We're going to highlight some specific action steps related to risk management that all boards and senior executives should consider in order to lift their organizations to the highest standards of risk management. And before we get going, I'd like to introduce Les Sikanowicz, who is our guest. Les has a rich history. He's a formerly practicing attorney, multiple academic degrees. He serves as a relationship catalyst for Roland Criss and leads our firm's new client relationships from the stage of discovery and collaboration at the initial levels of interaction all the way through implementation of our firm's fiduciary solutions. Les has over 25 years of experience involved in helping boards of directors, board-appointed committees, and executives. He has seen a lot and knows a lot. And prior to joining Roland Criss, he served clients in private practice with specific emphasis on litigation and mediation in employee legal matters. His business acumen has enabled him to successfully navigate complex litigation cases in state, federal, and appellate court levels. Les served as general counsel and director of risk advisory services for the fifth largest credit union in Texas with 650 employees, 250,000 members, and 20 locations. And while there, Les served on the leadership team, board liaison to the supervisory and committees, including the audit committee of the institution. And he successfully built a strategic, customer-focused legal department and redesigned the credit union's risk management functions. So his resume is demonstrates a great deal of expertise on the subject that we're going to be talking about. Besides that, he's just really a nice guy. So Les, welcome. We're really happy to have you here today.
Thank you, Ron.
Risk-taking is an integral part, of course, of any business enterprise, and the risk appetite of an organization defines how much risk an organization is going to take on overall. So it seems that decisions are needed to decide which risks make sense to embrace, and those will be primarily the risks the company owns, and by that I mean those risks which it's equipped to manage and exploit. Les, question for you. Within the board, where does responsibility for risk oversight typically rest?
It's a good question, Ron, but before I answer it, I just want to tell the listeners that you know, risk is a very simple word, but it's really complex to define, and it lives in a lot of locations within any organizations, and also has complex consequences. To actually respond to your question, risk, the responsibility for risk actually lives with each board member, but more importantly, it is sort of a heightened level of scrutiny and liability for board members should they sit on certain committees, depending on what the committee's charter should be. So in this instance, we're talking about, let's suppose, a retirement committee. Though in this retirement committee situation, the rest of the board is going to look to the retirement committee as subject matter experts in advising on recommendations that it brings to the full board. And so in what I call legal land, in terms of liability, that someone will look at them with more of a heightened scrutiny and standard than, say, a board member who may not be on that retirement committee. And so that kind of gives you an impact, kind of gives you an idea of where it lives. Risk lives with all the board members, but it lives in a heightened sense with the committee members, because they, the rest of the board members are relying on those board members' recommendations, and as well as the executive team.
Over the past 13 months, breach of fiduciary duty lawsuits focusing on retirement plans have been filed against some of America's major colleges and universities, organizations like MIT, Cornell, NYU, and over a dozen others have all felt the sting of litigation on this particular issue we're addressing today. From reports in the trade press, we've read that governing boards might have been caught off guard. It appears that fiduciary risk has the potential to fly below a board's radar. So, assuming that's the case, and in your opinion, how does a board gain a thorough understanding of the organization's risks?
In order for the board to gain a thorough understanding of the organization's risks, it's incumbent upon the board to do what I think about four things. Number one is, it's incumbent on the board to understand that company's or that organization's business, and at a high level, not necessarily down in the weeds. Number two is, I think that, you know, in the fiduciary capacity, the board members board members need to have an understanding of the distinction between risk literacy and education. So what I mean by that is that they need to understand where the risks live, what risk looks like within their organization. Number three is, I think it's incumbent upon the board members to have a knowledge of the processes and the governance policies, because they can be, they sort of risk lives within those areas, because if the policies or the governance processes aren't followed, it could create fiduciary liability. And lastly, number four is that the board members need to kind of have an understanding of the knowledge of the monitoring systems, which monitor the policy systems and the policy processes. And those four things, kind of a board member can gain a thorough understanding of the organization's risks within that organization.
It sounds from what you've said that there's almost a cultural issue here at stake, that a board needs to have a mindset of sorts that drives an interest in understanding the institution's risks. And I think it's interesting that almost all agree when talking about the credit crisis of 2008 that risk culture may have been at the center of the cause of much of what went on during that period.
I agree.
And the growing number of organizations that have been sued in recent months for retirement plan related problems are causing many to wonder if cultural behaviors are now a key factor in the expansion of fiduciary risk. And if that's the case, what, in your opinion, are the key elements of a risk culture, Les?
Ron, I just want to agree with you. I was present during the 2008-2009 crisis, and it was a result of risk culture failures. But to answer your question, what is the key elements of a risk culture? I've kind of identified about a handful of things. Number one is, you know, the distinct and consistent tone from the top on risk taking needs to be looked at. You know, what is the temperature or the appetite of the management team, but also the board team. Number two is that you have to look to what's the commitment to ethical principles, practices, and policies. Thirdly, is managing risk widely accepted as being important? within the organization. And also, is risk transparent, and is it a timely risk information flow up and down throughout the organization? And number five, is risk reporting and whistleblowing encouraged? In other words, is it really encouraged to be transparent? Number six is there active learning from the impacted risks and near misses? In other words, to look at those things as teaching moments, not as areas that could be of fear of consequences. Number seven is, does taking risks, is it rewarded or is it challenged within the organization? Number eight I listed was, risk management skills should be valued, encouraged, and developed. And as are, I would call, managed risk takers. Number nine is, risk properly resourced throughout the management system and function? And lastly, number 10, is there a regular challenging of the status quo in the definition of risk from diverse perspectives?
Well, for our listeners, that is a great framework to begin implementation of a full-blown upgraded risk management strategy. And I'm wondering, for those directors and senior executives on our audience today, or in our audience, what kind of actions from this discussion could they take to strengthen their enterprise risk management system?
Well, I think actions and strengthening, I would also mention as something that is reduces risk liability. So if you understand this, the actions I would recommend taking is, number one is understanding risk in their industry. In terms of, what does the risk appear like in their industry? Where does it live? So a little bit of knowledge of their industry, especially in the retirement plan systems, you know, the fiduciary duty of the retirement committee and how that duty is heightened because of they're looked at subject matter experts by the rest of the board. Number two is they need to assess their own risk attitudes or appetites. And one of the things I always use the analogy of is that, do you want, you know, a table of 10 cliff divers versus 10 auditors? Each of those types of individuals will interpret risk differently. And so and it goes back to the early question and you had asked this, do you have a team of diverse risk appetites and risk attitudes at the table? And number three is, assess the management team and their risk appetites or risk attitudes. And is that management team's risk appetite or risk attitude a diverse one?
Well, it seems clear from what you're saying that there's no magic prescription for crisis proofing a business. Is that fair to say?
That is true. You're gonna probably encounter speed bumps along the way, and there's no foolproof plan, no magic prescription. It's really comes down to awareness, literacy, and appetite.
Are there specific solutions that can ensure an enterprise risk management approach is tight enough for today's challenges?
Yes, I would. I kind of thought about this question, and so the number one thing is, I think that risk literacy /aka education needs to be at the forefront of the business or whatever the organization or culture, and that it needs to be part of the evaluation. Number two is that you have to understand your industry or organization's risk standards. What I would recommend, number three, is I would call risk appetite assessments. In other words, assess the risk appetite of the board, number one, or A, the board, and B, the executive team, and see how diverse those risk appetites and how those risk appetites coincide and collaborate in moments of evaluating risk. Number four is basically what you could do is you could develop a scorecard of the risk diversity within the management, the executive team and the board to see what it looks like from the whole organization. Lastly, number five is you could, on an annual basis, kind of look at the risk appetites of the board and the executive team and sort of recalibrate the risk diversity and have conversations about that in a collaborative way.
Those are great steps. And in fact, as we head toward the final couple of minutes here of the allotted time we have for our podcast today, I'm sure that our listeners are going to want to go back and listen to some of these insights you've given all of us today, because they represent just some well-tried, proven ways of going about not only the planning for an effective risk management strategy, but one that has some very specific action steps included. And for that, I appreciate your having provided them. Les, thanks so much for your participation today. Your insights have provided great value to our listeners. Since we are now, have we crossed our time boundary for today's podcast, I would like to remind our audience to tune in to our next podcast. And we want to thank you for joining us today and hope you have a great day.
Thank you.